Welcome to Energy Matters, exploring awakening to your authentic self and finding purpose through mind, body, and soul. With your hosts, Cody Edner and David Gandelman. Brought to you by intuitivevision.net and groundedmind.com.
Hello, hello. Welcome back to the Energy Matters podcast and welcome to our first episode of 2019. Happy New Year, Cody.
Hey, Happy New Year, David. It's great to be back and I am very excited about today's guest.
Yes, we have the incredible, incredible author, Lynn McTaggart. She's an investigative journalist. She's written some amazing books, The Intention Experiment, which I read years ago and it just blew my mind. And the fact that she's here to talk to us today, like, whoa, pretty cool.
It does.
We always get these guests. I'm like, why are they talking to us? Must be because we have a strong intention.
That's right.
Yeah. Or because we beg them, please, it's my birthday. Actually, my birthday was last month. But anyway, here we go. I go into Lynn's entire intro, her bio, when we get into the episode, but I just do want to say that she's incredibly talented and so, so smart. And the studies that she does on intention and the work that she's brought to the world, the healing that she's brought to the world is profound. And I think if you take anything out of this episode, you're going to come out with the understanding that if you take your attention and energy off of your own problems, which is usually where our energy and intention is, and you move it and you focus onto helping other people in a group setting, as is Lynn's way, but even, you know, I think individually, if you just start to focus on helping others, you actually get more benefit than when you just try to help yourself. And you even get more benefit than the person or people that you're trying to help. I thought those were fascinating findings from her studies, and she'll tell us all about that. So My intention today is not just for me to heal, me, but for you as well, Cody, and for all of you listening, for whatever it is that you're working on healing, creating, growing into. So We're going to jump into the episode. Before we do, if you go to energymatterspodcast.com, we have a free 30-minute class called Awakening to Your Spiritual Abilities. Just pop in your email address so we can email you every day forever. I don't even think we send one email. Man, we got to get better at that.
I was going to say, we haven't sent it like, maybe we'll send one a quarter. It
seems we got to get better at that. So if you get on there, me and Cody do a little chat in class about awakening to your own spiritual abilities, which is pretty cool. Pretty cool topic. So here we go. Let's start the new year off with Lynn McTaggart. Hey, Energy Matters listeners, welcome to another episode. We have a very special guest for you today, all the way from the UK, author Lynn McTaggart. She's written this amazing book called The Power of Eight, but you may also know her from the field, The Intention Experiment. And our intention today is to ask her the best possible questions to hopefully open you up to your own intention and awareness and really take some amazing steps on your path. Lynn, welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
It's my pleasure. Thanks so much.
Lynn, can we just start before we jump into the book? Can you maybe explain to our audience what it is that you mean by intention and maybe the mechanics of having an intention?
Well, you know, the popular idea about intention is that it's kind of a power thought. So people think, well, I get up in the morning, I do my meditation, I have my power thought. And that's basically the only thing the universe hears. But the science shows us that we're actually broadcasting at every moment of our day. And, you know, we're broadcasting 24/7. We're also receiving 24/7. And so intention is really, you know, all of those judgmental thoughts you have, all of the deliberate ideas that you have about yourself, all of the flotsam and jetsam that goes through your head, you know, every last, you know, unreasonable, mendacious thought you have also is an intention, and that really becomes your life's intention. So one of the things that I teach is all about becoming very focused and coherent about broadcasting what you want all the time, basically.
Very good. Do you teach that? Is there a foundational meditation practice to get to that, or how do we start to practice that?
Well, I mean, it's I speak about it in my book, The Power of Eight. I don't use meditation. I use a high degree of focus more mm-hmm. than that, because the intention exercise, as demonstrated in a lot of the science, with looking at intention masters, Buddhist monks, Qigong masters, master healers, it's not a state of quiescence like meditation. It's a very highly supercharged focus state. And also, I've had Life University, which is one of the largest chiropractic universities in the world, volunteered to put their neuroscience department at my disposal. And we did some studies on Power of Eight groups. And we found that their brainwave signatures are very, very different from meditation. They are much more, in fact, almost identical to Sufi masters undergoing chanting or Buddhist monks in the midst of ecstatic prayer. They create a state of ecstatic oneness. So it's all about a group effect, a group intention being very, very different. But it proceeds from the same way that I talk about in individual intention, which is about a highly focused mind state.
Is that, go ahead, Cody.
Yeah, does that state kind of mirror, like we hear a lot about, you know, your presence, really being present, being right in the moment, and kind of that mindfulness, or is it a little different?
Well, it's maybe mindfulness on a particular exercise. So it would be much more akin to mindfulness while you're eating your cornflakes rather than mindfulness of generally being present. It's being really focused on a target. I'm going to be focused with my five senses on eating those cornflakes. You know, what does it sound like? What does it feel like as it goes down my throat? What does it smell like? You know, we don't engage those senses usually in those kinds of activities.
And so, Lynn, can you tell us a little bit about the book, The Power of Eight, why eight people, and why did you go from as large-scale groups that you talk about so much to a small group of people, and what is the difference?
Okay, well, I started doing intention experiments basically because I was skeptical of all of the popular stuff about intention. I had done my book, The Field, which had really delved into all of the frontier science that is providing us with an alternative view of the world now, that the world's very different from the way we've been brought up and told about it. And so fresh off of that, there was one thing that a number of the scientists that I'd interviewed and studied had discovered over and over again and alluded to, which was in their experiments, they showed that thoughts are things, but also thoughts are things that affect other things. So part of me wanted to know, well, how far can you take this? You know, I was listening at the time to some of the popular ideas about manifestation, et cetera, and they were all about, I want, I get. And I thought, is that true? You know, is that really true? Because, you know, I have a background as an investigative reporter, so I tend to be fairly skeptical about stuff, and that's never left me, even though I'm in this subject. So I thought, okay, well, by that time the field was in about 30 languages. So I figured, well, I've got a lot of readers out there. And I also have a lot of good contacts with many frontier scientists. So if I just put them together, I'll have the largest global laboratory in the world. So that's how I started the intention experiment, was really to test how far can we take this? You know, can we cure cancer with our thoughts, basically? Or are we talking about just subtle processes? So I did that, and I was shocked to see, because I didn't expect it really to work, but it really worked. I mean, we've run 33 experiments to date, everything from making seeds grow faster to purifying water to lowering violence in war-torn areas to, you know, curing people of PTSD. And of those 33, 29 have shown measurable, positive, mostly significant effects. you know, there's no drug out there, no pharmaceutical drug with that kind of track record. And I've worked with a variety of scientists, so you can't say it's individual bias. So back in 2008, this was a year after I'd started the intention experiments, I kept wondering to myself, well, I guess I should try to scale this down and do something about this in a workshop. But again, background as a reporter, I'm not a personal development trainer, so wasn't used to workshops. I didn't know what to do, and I wasn't sure how to scale this down. So I was kicking around the idea one night with my husband. My husband's also a journalist. And I said, I don't know, maybe I'll just put them in a group of eight or so and have them send healing intention to a member of the group with a health challenge. And Brian said to me, I like it, the power of eight. So that's how it was born. We started our first workshop in Chicago. We had 100 or so people. We put them into groups of eight. We had them choose somebody in the group with a health challenge. They all sent healing intention to the person in the group. And I was saying, you've got to all hold hands. You've got to make an unbroken connection. You got to do this. You got to do that. I'm basically making it up as I go along because I knew how to do intention. I'd studied that, certainly. But this small group stuff, I wasn't really sure about, certainly not for healing. So I expected it was going to be a kind of feel-good effect, you know, like having your back rubbed or something. But that wasn't like what it happened at all. The people who were the recipients came back the next day, and one by one, they took the mic and they said things like this. I have cataracts and I'm 80% better. Wow. I have knee arthritis and I walked in normally today. I have terrible insomnia and it's all cleared. I slept like a baby last night. I have terrible gut problems and my gut feels normal today, and on it went. So I was shocked, pretty much thought this was a placebo effect. But then over the next years, I kept experimenting with this in workshops and conferences, and everywhere I went with every group I tried, we had these instant healings. Mm. And now thousands of them, you know, wow. Everything. You know, we had a woman with a dislocated shoulder recently where the shoulder just slipped back into place during this 10-minute exercise. But another woman who was scheduled for knee surgery, she couldn't even walk without her knee popping out. And after this, right after this, she did, for the whole audience, she did a deep squat. And she's been able to cancel her surgery and she's fine. And, you know, on and on and on. Another woman with scoliosis so bad, she was in terrible pain. Pain vanished during the 10-minute thing. That's all we do this for, 10 minutes. And
amazing.
Her daughter wrote me a few months later to say, Mom's back has changed so much, we've had to change the rear view mirror in her car.
Wow.
So we've had, you know, and for many years, I had a real hard time believing this, which is why it's taken me 10 years to write about it, because I needed to study it, understand it, look at it from every angle, do the brainwave studies, you know, put people in groups and study them for a year and try to figure out what on earth was going on here.
Wow, this sounds a lot like miracles. And I know that's a loaded word, but do you believe in miracles now?
I sure do. I sure do, because I see them all the time. I see them on my master classes where I put people in groups. I teach them over 6 or 7 weeks on a webinar, and then I put them into groups for a whole year and have them meet week by week by week. And I started doing that in 2015, basically as an exercise in curiosity. I wanted to have my own little petri dish and see what was going to go on. You know, I'd seen plenty of physical healings, but if they met people for a whole year, would everything in their lives begin to heal? And so we did this, and it was just astonishing what went on, because of the first time I did this, I had 250 people on the course. And of those 250 people, 150 met regularly over the year. And of that 150, pretty much 100% had major life changes, whether it was their finances, their career, their relationships, their health, their life's purpose, anything like that. You know, we had a woman who had 15 years of chronic fatigue, could barely walk her dog for 10 minutes without having to spend the afternoon in bed. And she's lifting weights and hiking now. And another guy who had lifelong depression, very embarrassing. He's a clinical psychologist. He tried every integrative everything. And through his group, he found the source of his problem, which was a liver filtration system that wasn't working. And as soon as he got that sorted, the depression vanished. And, you know, we had people who had financial windfalls just out of the blue, money coming, just what they needed. That was the interesting thing. It wasn't like they won the lottery. They got the money they needed to pay off a debt, to buy that car, to do whatever, to set up their website or their business, just what they needed at the right time. People starting new amazing careers, even though they were middle-aged, and on and on and on it went. So yeah, for me, it was, and continues to be a miracle.
That is incredible. Lynn, can you walk us through, maybe pull back the veil a little bit and walk us through what this would look like if a group of eight people get together and they set an intention to heal someone? Like how does that work?
Well, I talk about it in full in my book, The Power of Eight, and I give them just the rudimentaries. You know, there's a lot of subtlety, et cetera, that I teach, that I've learned over the time. But basically, it's about getting together in a group of eight. And by the way, it doesn't have to be eight. I discovered it just as I told you. It was an arbitrary number I pulled out of the air to say, hey, let's do this. You know, maybe we'll put them in groups of eight. I mean, a lot of people have written to me about the symbolism of eight and the idea that it's a sideways infinity symbol and all of that great stuff. I did not have that in mind when we did this. And what I've looked at and seen over the years is that 5 works, 12 works. You know, all it needs to be is a small group. I think it's probably a little too small when it's lower than about 5, and it's too big and unwieldy when it's more than 12, at least for a healing group.
Right.
This works whether you are on the internet, you know, whether you're just together on Skype or whether or not you are meeting physically. And you simply need to set a group intention for someone inside or outside the group, make it very specific, all decide on the intention statement, and all think the same thought at the same time. While you take a few deep breaths to get into synchrony, you know, to together, and you continue to hold hands or psychically hold hands if you're on Skype together, and just send the intention to that person while you imagine them doing whatever it is you want, you know, for them, whether it's healing them or them having their finances be good or whatever. And the more specific, the better. So that's basically it. There's a lot of tips, et cetera, as I say in my book on my website, lynnmctaggart.com, et cetera. But those are the rudimentaries of it. And I think that's what's quite amazing and continues to be amazing about it to me, which is, you know, we're always taught that these kinds of mechanisms for healing in an extrasensory way require a lot of discipline and a lot of practice, you know. But what I've learned is, you know, you don't need ayahuasca and you don't need sweat lodge and you don't need years of discipline and priming. You don't need all of that stuff. You know, you don't need to walk on your knees for days or whatever. You just need a group and a common intention. And I think miracles unfold. And the most miraculous part of it is that what we've seen from the brainwave studies is that, as I say, it's like a Sufi master. It puts people into a state of ecstatic oneness, where the portions of the brain that make us feel separate, which is the parietal lobes, they sit right here. They are dialed way down. And so are the parts of the brain involved in worry, doubt, negativity. That, we were also surprised, is also turned way down. So these are people in a state of ecstatic oneness. So the only conclusion one can draw, because remember, these people who were being studied at Life University were student volunteers, and they had a very short video from me basically explaining the rudimentaries how to do it, and yet they were transported into the state. So as I say, I think this is a group And a group intention is a fast track to the miraculous.
Mm. Mm. And we're also taught that we have to have a deep belief in something. And I'm wondering what you've discovered relative to that. Is that, do we have to really like deeply believe it, or is it enough just to have an open mind and just do it?
Well, that's a great question, I have to say, because we've had many examples of people who either were unaware that they were getting intended for or didn't believe it. Now, I do a thing called Intention of the Week on my website where my community, I send three nominees who, and hundreds of people send in their cases. They're almost always health cases, quite sad too. And my worst job every week is having to choose three out of the batch. Any more than that, I think people are not going to be able to focus that long. Right. So we pick three, we send them to people and all of the members of my community. And every Sunday, we send a common intention to these three people consecutively. And there have been babies, there have been fetuses who have been helped and had miraculous turnarounds as a result. But one of my favorite cases is something I recounted in The Power of Eight about a young kid called Daniel. His stepfather wrote me. Daniel was, Luke, sorry, his name is Luke. Luke was 15, and he broke up with his first serious girlfriend. And in a fit of existential angst, he threw himself off a 40-foot structure onto hard ground. And he broke every bone in his body. He, you know, had brain damage. He had nerve damage. He was a mess. The doctors weren't even sure he was going to live. And his stepfather wrote to me to implore me to ask the community to do intention for him. So I got the whole community to do three consecutive weeks of healing intention for Luke. Now, Luke responded, and it was really interesting because his stepfather kept up a running commentary to me by email of exactly how Luke responded at the times and afters of the intentions. So we could kind of monitor what was going on. And every time we did this, Luke had this major change in his attitude and his healing. And he got out of the hospital in record time, which was really incredible. But he convinced me that this is something more than placebo because, you know, like most 15-year-olds, Luke doesn't believe anything his parents believe. And he thought their idea about the power of intention was really stupid. So right. Something else was at work. There have been people who haven't been conscious, who have been intended for, and they've had amazing turnarounds too. So belief, I think, helps. There's certainly some evidence. I write about it in the intention experiment about the beliefs of the healer and the healee being congruent, being an important part. But it's not strictly necessary. Even at conferences, I've had people have healings when I've put them in Power of Eight groups when they've been highly skeptical of it. Mm-hmm. So it seems to work. You know, it seems something else is going on here. But the most interesting piece on that Luke story isn't even Luke. The most interesting piece is another hint I got that made me realize how important altruism is here. Because I was running that 2015 masterclass where I was studying everybody. And one of the people was a woman called Andy. Now, Andy was just going through a divorce, had two young children. She'd sold her business and she needed to get a job. And she was very, very talented in marketing and coaching, relatively young woman, and, you know, just couldn't get a job anywhere. And she was just getting really frantic, and her group kept intending for it, and nothing was happening. So I was listening to this a lot, and I finally just said, Andy, just get off of yourself. Start intending for someone else. And I had her really focus on Luke. That very next week, out of nowhere, she gets a call from somebody she didn't even know offering her this dream job. Mm-hmm. And that happened over and over and over again to the point where I started looking at the piece that is seldom talked about in self-help, because self-help is all about self, which is other help, and how important other help is.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great point. I was going to ask about that, because in this world we live in, it seems like there's oftentimes a sense of scarcity and not enough. And so it's easy to be in the mindset of, I need to get mine first, whatever that is, even in a relationship of just communicating, you know, I need to get my point across first, or I need to get whatever I need first. And I was reading in some of your stuff about this reciprocal effect, where when you start to intend for someone else, there seems to be this feedback loop of, that's when you then maybe get yours, so to speak, whatever we want to call that.
Yes.
Can you speak more to that? Because that seems really powerful. Like, if we could really understand that and everybody starts to practice that, just that alone would make a better world.
Well, that's it. You know, when I started looking at that, and I started looking at the science of altruism, I was really blown away. There was a really interesting study done by a psychologist who was also a priest, who was very interested in the healing effects of prayer. Now, there had been a number of studies of prayer helping with physical effects, but nothing about prayer and mental illness, so-called mental illness. So he gathered together about 400 volunteers who had been diagnosed with clinical depression, divided that group in half, and half of them were supposed to get prayer, and the other half would give the prayer. So, and it was a prayerful intention, essentially. So they did that, and after that, he used all kinds of psychological parameters to study how they were. And he found that the group that had received the prayer did well, but nowhere near as well in terms of improvement as the people who had given the prayer.
Wow.
And that is echoed in all of the research, all the literature about altruism. You know, it's like a bulletproof vest. People who do anything for other people, even take out their garbage, you know, their neighbor's garbage or something, live longer, are happier, and are healthier in every regard. And possibly the study on altruism that nailed it for me was a study of people who were pleasure seekers, who, you know, were living the dream. They were living the good life. They had all the money in the world. They were taking a lot of holidays. They had good jobs. They were, you know, they were, number one, was doing really well. When researchers looked at their immune systems, they found they had terrible immune systems. These guys were automatic candidates for heart attack, stroke, Alzheimer's. They were going to be dropping like flies. Then they looked at another group who were less affluent, but service oriented. They were doing for others, and they were very, you know, their lives were all about other people. These guys had amazing immune systems. They were going to live forever. So that, to me, really spoke to something so powerful, because, you know, I started thinking that the self-help movement might actually be a little dangerous. You know, all that focus on the self, all of this personal development, which is all about me, 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 might be really bad for you, and that the surest way to heal so much of what is happening with you is to get off of yourself and focus on someone else. So that is a big piece of the group, the intention groups that I teach. It's very much a part of the Power of Eight, is all about altruism, is giving, and you receive through giving.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. So Lynn, it really does. Let's take this to like group conflicts. And I know you've done studies and intention experiments with like bring down levels of violence, like in the Middle East. How does that work when you bring a group together to actually change the energy in an entire country, or bring down the crime levels? What does that look like?
Well, we've run 7 peace intention experiments. And we did the first one in 2008 in Sri Lanka. And I chose Sri Lanka because, A, not many Americans and Westerners were thinking about Sri Lanka, even though it was in the midst of a 25-year civil war. and the rebel forces had taken over a whole part of the north. I mean, Sri Lanka looks like a hand with a thumb, and the whole part of the thumb was the Wani district, which had been taken over by rebels. They had choked off the whole north. And but the real reason I chose it was, aside from the idea that no one was thinking about it, praying for it, or anything, because, you know, I didn't want to have any intention contamination. We're really studying this as a study. What I also wanted was a place where they were having particularly good record keeping. Now, that is a hard thing to get in most areas of conflict. Nobody wants to count the bodies. Nobody wants to talk about the bodies. But there's like a character who's like the Gandhi of Sri Lanka, who was running an organization that was keeping careful record keeping on both sides. So I needed, according to the scientists who were going to work with me on this, one of whom is a professor of statistics at the University of California, she wanted 2 years worth of weekly violence data from 2 years before to some months afterward, so she could look at the trend. Because it's no good saying, oh, violence went down right after our intention. I mean, that could be anything. It could be the weather causing that. Mm-hmm. But if you see that a trend is for violence going up, and suddenly after your intention experiment, it starts dropping sharply and it stays lower, then that is more compelling. You've bucked the trend. So we did that, and the first time violence did go down, but more interestingly, we did it over 8 days, you know, the 20-minute window of from beginning to end, over 8 days, where I involved people from, I think it was about 80 countries around the world. We had about 15,000 people. And what happened during that week was amazing. It was the most decisive week, it turned out, of the entire war. The government won a couple of decisive battles. Mm-hmm. So actually, violence went up during that week, which was worrying for me. But then it plummeted down, and within, because of those battles, the government was able to recapture the North within a few months. Remember, this was an intractable war, no side was winning. And a few months after that, finished, the war was over, this 25-year war was over. Wow. So we were going, wow, did we do this? Now, well, short answer is, who knows? Because lots of things could be doing that. So the only way to start really building a case for this is to do it again and again. And we did, but before I talk about that, I want to talk about what was even more amazing to me, which was I decided to survey our participants after this first attempt. And I got back thousands of responses saying things like, I felt like I was part of a higher network. I was crying uncontrollably, and I had goosebumps all over my body. I felt like I was in the tractor beam of Star Wars. And, you know, you have to remember, these were people participating like we are doing today on their computer screen individually from all over the globe. So they weren't even in the same room together. So this was bizarre to me. But then what was even more interesting is what happened to them in the ensuing weeks. They said things like, I'm getting along better with my coworkers and my boss. I've made up with my estranged partner, relative, sister, brother, whatever. I'm in love with everybody I come across. In fact, about half of the people were basically saying, I feel more love for everyone I come in contact with. You know, they were hugging strangers. I was starting to think, what on earth is going on here? And it suddenly dawned on me after running these a few times that there was some sort of interesting mirror effect happening, so that when people were participating in a peace intention experiment, their lives were becoming more peaceful. Something in them was touched too. And when we ran something else, like a healing experiment, we ran one for a Gulf War vet with PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, with that one, we got a really interesting outcome. He never needed any treatment again. It was great. He went traveling, found the love of his life. Great news for him, for Todd. But even more interesting, what was happening to my audience? Thousands of people writing, I have a terrible arthritic hip, and I'm walking normally. I've, you know, the same thing, gut problems and they're all healed. Some sort of mirror effect, but this time being healing. So I started thinking to myself, wow, now maybe the target isn't as important as the effect on the participants. And, you know, as I say, we've run 7 to date. And one of the latest I ran a year ago really spoke to that, because I get hosted by lots of people around the world. And one of the people who hosts me in the Middle East is a guy called Dr. Salah Al Rashid, who is like the Deepak Chopra of the Middle East. He's got a huge following. And what he's been doing most recently is he set up a studio in Southern England. And what he does is he broadcasts, he has an audience and people interested in this kind of work from all over the Gulf states, all over the Arab nations. So this is an easy way to get to them. He puts them, people from different countries in, you know, say in certain cities in, you know, in Saudi Arabia or Kuwait, he has them go to a hotel conference room, has a camera in there, and then his studio in Southern England has the capability of broadcasting to all these different places, and it's a two-way communication. They can also talk to the presenter who's there. So I was part of a workshop using this technology, and it's very cool. It's, you know, you're okay, let's hear from, you know, let's hear from Bahrain, or let's hear from Oman, and then people would talk to you from there, and they would also be broadcast to everyone else. So we got the idea to do an intention experiment for Jerusalem, because it had been suffering much more violence. And I had been hearing from a documentary maker in Israel, Jewish woman called Sipi Raz. And we agreed to do an intention experiment where we'd have all these Arab people from all these Arab countries, but also an auditorium full of Jews in Jerusalem as well participating. So we had, you know, 9 different locations, the 8 Arab cities, the one filled with Israeli Jews. And we all did an intention together, which I led, for an area of Jerusalem suffering a lot of high violence. Now, it was interesting. Yeah, the evidence looks like the violence did go down, as it has done, it appears, in all 7 of the peace experiments we've done. But that wasn't the interesting piece of it. The more interesting piece was what happened among the Arabs and Israelis. Because they can talk and they have the capability to talk back and forth to each other, the Arabs were saying things like, I love you, your God is my God. The Israelis were crying and saying, we love you too, sister. And it was going back and forth like that. They were befriending each other. They were forgiving each other. And the whole experience started really trending on Middle Eastern Twitter feeds. MPs in Kuwait were writing about it, about this being a really effective way to bring people together. And so were the press in Israel and Jerusalem. And it started getting me thinking that this is a mechanism for healing polarity. You know, that the target almost doesn't matter. It's about people essentially praying together. So we did another one this past November where we had Israelis, we had, you know, Israeli Jews, we had Arabs, and we had Americans all intending for peace in Yemen. And that very night, after there had been really heavy fighting in the port that we focused on, that night they called a ceasefire. It was amazing. But again, it was the three-way communication with these warring cultures that was really the important piece. And the piece I want to explore, for instance, with Democrats and Republicans, they could use a piece of this now. So that's one of our plans.
Yes, they can. Good.
Yeah. Wow. Very interesting.
Blast the crap out of them with the intention, please, Lynn.
Well, I want them to come together in the same room. One of our plans is to set up that with the technology where we can put cameras in different places and have audiences where they've got both Democrats and Republicans in the same room together and see what happens.
That would be cool.
Oh, that would be cool.
on a personal level practice, is there certain intentions that you work on for yourself every day?
Probably not so much. I do an intention on, I don't believe in keep worrying about the same intention. I try to just do an intention of what particularly I want to have happen on that particular time, whether it has to do with something for my health or whether it has to do with something for, I mean, for instance, I had to have, there was a tooth that died in my mouth without any symptoms. I didn't know, and I just got found out. So I had to go through a procedure just a week ago, and I just did an intention, I'm not going to have any pain from this. And I didn't. I haven't had to take one aspirin for it or, you know, Tylenol for it. It just didn't hurt at all. So, I'll respond to what's going on. A lot of times it will have something to do with work. I might intend to have a specific level of people participate in something or intend that something runs smoother than it has, or intend that it runs smoothly, or just, I've just become very aware of being very specific and telling the universe what I want. And also trying to be careful not to flood the universe with any negativity about what I want. You know, I think it's really important to maintain that expectation of positive results and never to say, oh, it can't happen to me. What a loser. All of that stuff. That is a cancer with intention. I think the biggest thing for me has just been becoming a believer in this, because I have been shocked and awed for the last 10 years. And I guess I consider myself a kind of gatekeeper for this. This is, you know, somehow the universe gifted me or asked me to be a custodian of this process. It clearly is a process that's powerful. Mm-hmm. And so I try to maintain its integrity.
Good. That leads me to the question I have, which is, being an investigative reporter, how did you get interested in this, like to write the field? Or, I mean, this is something David and I have done all our lives and been interested in terms of exploring this idea of, we call it energy, but how the mind affects reality and the interaction between people energetically and what can be healing in that. And intuitive, we also practice the intuitive side of it, but what drew you to it? Like, what was your moment of, I need to like devote my life to exploring this reality?
Well, you know, it wasn't that intentional. I mean, it wasn't intentional. Right. What happened was in 1990, my husband and I set up a publication called What Doctors Don't Tell You, which I still edit. It was a newsletter, and now it's a magazine. We still both work on, you know, we're still producing this. But as a magazine now, it has an international readership, and it's, you know, it's published in 16 different languages.
Wow.
So back in the 90s, when this was first getting off the ground, we were studying medical literature. Our intention was always to show what works and what doesn't work in conventional and alternative medicine. And in the course of doing that, I kept coming across very, very good studies of things like spiritual healing. Mm. And that just sparked my curiosity, as well as good studies of acupuncture and other systems like homeopathy that defy medical science. And I kept thinking, particularly with the spiritual healing, wait a minute, you know, if you can send a thought to someone else and make them better, well, that in itself undermines everything we think about how the world works. So I set off to find out whether there was something like human energy fields out there. And that's really, I thought this was going to be a fairly easy task. I would go to some frontier physicists or biologists, and they would explain to me that there was such a thing, and I'd write it up, and that would be it, and hand it the book. So what I did not expect was meeting these scientists, recognizing that each of them had a little piece of what compounds into a completely new view of the world. And that there were two elements that were going to prove a challenge to me. One is they only work in their own experimental little patch. They don't like to conjecture beyond that. And so I realized if someone's going to knit this together, it's going to have to be me. And then the second part that was daunting was that they speak in math. You know, they don't speak in, they speak in code.
Right.
So I was going to have to decode what they say. And I'm not a physicist. So it meant, in many cases, 25 interviews with people to really get a handle on what they were doing and what it is. And so that really set me on the journey, because writing that book really changed the messenger.
So you kind of opened up as you discovered more and more how big of a world maybe this is. That
oh, yeah. And I realized, wait a minute, you know, and it was such a hard book to do. And suddenly I almost felt like, you know, I suddenly got it. And I was suddenly writing furiously. And what it made me realize was, you know, if we're not separate, we're all part of this giant energy field. You know, if our brains are just sending and receiving mechanisms and not the repository of memory and other cognitive function, then that changes everything. You know, we have to change the way we live. And, you know, as a journalist, a lot of people reading the field would write to me afterward and say, well, how do I live this? And so that's a mistake to ask a journalist. So me and my team, you know, 1.5 million words later, we created a whole program called Living the Field. And we tried to answer the question. And I've been trying to answer that question ever since.
Okay, and that's what led to the intention experiments then, is answering that question, really.
Yeah, and that's really what, you know, I suppose I've ended up making a career of my enthusiasms.
That's a great way to be. I like that.
Making a career out of your enthusiasm, that's amazing. Lynn, do you think some people have a stronger intention than others?
You know, there are some people who are more gifted at, in the psychic realm, no question. It's like people who are more gifted at playing the piano. But everybody can do this. And there's nobody I've met who can't do this. And so it is a matter of practice and focus and being specific and a number of other things. And getting off of yourself, a load of other things. But the main thing that becomes transformational is the group. That's what I have found.
Yeah, so there's some power in that.
Lynn, where do people find groups to be able to be a part of?
Okay, on my website, for Remember It Works Just As Well, when people are working virtually, when people attend my masterclass, I run a once a year masterclass in Power of Eight Intention Masterclass, where I teach people for 6 weeks, and then I put them in groups and they meet every week, and then I contact them every week with all kinds of challenges and homework and things to do with the group, et cetera, and backup calls. So cool. We find that, you know, a lot of these groups are incredibly powerful. Most groups do really amazingly well, and the people have never physically met. They've met on Zoom, they've met on Skype, or whatever. So if you don't have 7 friends who want to be part of this, and you set it up, you know, after reading my book, The Power of Eight, and finding out all the things about how to do it, and some exercises you can do with it, then what you can do is come on my website, lynnmctaggart.com/forum, which is an area where hundreds and hundreds of groups have formed. And we have a place there where you can join an existing group in your time zone, or create an existing group by advertising that you want to set one up.
Great.
I love that. I have one follow-up question, Lynn. Do you have a specific intention for 2019 for this planet?
Oh gosh, a load of them. I mean, a lot of it has to do with really ending such polarity, because, you know, in America, it's worse than it's ever been. You know, and there's a lot of that's being stoked. In Britain with Brexit, there's a lot, there's more than it's ever been too. There's just these enormous divides and they're happening all over Europe. So my biggest intentions are really for these disparate groups to get to start talking to each other and to get that we're not so different after all. We all have the same values. You know, we all want safe streets, good education for our children, enough food and water to eat, and all of those basics, you know, decent roads. Yeah. So there has to be a way where people can come together and not be so divided.
Mm. I love that. I love that. And if you're listening, get in on that.
Well, we're going to try that again on one of our big intention experiments. And if you are interested, it's intention experiments are always free. Just sign up to my website, lynnmctaggart.com, and you'll get all the news about all the intention experiments we're going to be running for the year and onward.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Lynn. Cody, one more question.
One more question. And what would that be?
Lynn, after all of these years and years of work and studies that you have put in, is there just one kind of nugget of wisdom that you could kind of distill for us, for the audience, to take away around intention that they can kind of sit and work with a little bit after this podcast?
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I think that the most powerful thing that I've learned is that, you know, we were meant to, I mean, there's a wonderful song from YouTube that is all about, it's called One, We're Not the Same. And there's this line about, we have to carry each other. And I always used to think that was about obligation, weight. It's not, it's about, I've come to realize it's about privilege. You know, the connection we have, the interconnection we have, the need to help each other is a powerful, powerful way to help ourselves. And so, you know, it's been on a Hallmark card, do unto others, you know? Right. I mean, but it is so powerful, this idea that when you're trying to heal yourself or heal the world, you know, don't play small. You know, always seek power in numbers.
That's great.
I love that. Thank you so much, Lynn. And
thank you.
And thank you for being here. And for everyone listening, lynnmctaggart.com, her new book, The Power of Eight. If you've never read The Intention Experiment, The Field, check them out. We so appreciate your time today, Lynn. And we appreciate all of your amazing intentions that you have for this planet. Thank you for being here. And we'll see you guys next time on Energy Matters. Take care.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Lynn.
That was a really cool conversation. Thank you all so much for listening. And, you know, it brought me back, Cody. I was just thinking of like the intention that me and you set when we started the Energy Matters podcast, which was already like, geez, 2.5 years ago.
Yeah.
at like putting out one episode a month, just where we're at. But when we started it, we talked a lot. I think our first episode, we talked a lot about what our intention was for the podcast and I think continues to be, which is help people become aware of energy and the fact that it is real and the fact that it affects you and the world. Your thoughts, your feelings affect the world. That the way Lynn put it, that thoughts are things and energy is something that you can learn to work with and manipulate to make yourself more, I guess I would say, aware of what's going on, because we all kind of have this somewhat lit consciousness and we wake up in the morning and we kind of look around and we go, what the hell is going on? Right. Why am I here? Why does that person hurt my feelings? Why is there not enough money? Who am I? What's my next step in life? And I think that when we become aware of energy more and more on a deeper and deeper level, some of those things become clearer. And so my intention continues to be for this podcast, for all of you listening, is to help you become more aware of energy and yourself, whether that's through meditating, through eating well, you know, through journaling, through whatever it takes. I think all of our guests have a unique perspective on that. I think whatever works, whatever it takes, if you keep just working at finding out who you are, what your purpose is, what your energy is like, you're going to make progress. And I know from teaching a lot of people and working with a lot of clients that like everyone thinks they're like, I'm doing everything I can, but nothing's changing. But if we really kind of dive deeper and audit what they've got going on, they're not really doing everything they can most of the time.
Right.
And yeah.
Rarely are we.
Rarely.
You know, and the other thing that I really got out of this episode that I enjoyed that Lynn shared, and it kind of goes to this awareness of that you're talking about, David, not just energy, but kind of the thing that's beyond and spirituality. And it seems like it has to be something that's, you know, big or out there. But when you asked Lynn what her intentions are, the thing I noticed about them is they were all very practical and immediate and just kind of something that could be used right away. It's not something that's out there or big. It's like right here. And that's really the practice when you start to become aware of energy and thoughts are things and that intentions have power. It's all about just creating your life day to day that you start to get very much proactive about and active in. So yeah. Things stop happening to us. We start being a major participant in kind of bringing things to the world. And that whole idea that you receive by giving, that you, when you put your intention out to help something out in the world, to help a person or a cause or this, you know, a very specific thing, that is a big part of that participation, and it reciprocates back to us so quickly. So there was a lot of pretty wild nuggets in this episode, I tell you.
Absolutely. And as many times as we hear this, it's still something that we have to come back to, which is, you know, we focus so much on the negative, and that's an intention as well. When you put your attention energy into having negative thoughts or thinking something's not going to work out the way it could, the way you'd like it to, and then it amplifies in that direction. And Lynn was pretty clear on making sure that you really keep bringing your attention back to putting your energy into those positive thoughts that really amplify out into what she called the universe and then reflect back to you. So we've all heard it a gazillion times, but I find myself sometimes in a negative thought and go, damn it, David.
Right. It's so wake easy up. To go down that road.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So on that note, we hope that you guys all have an amazing new year, that you do set your own intentions. I'm actually teaching a workshop tonight. This podcast won't be out yet, but tonight on intention and manifesting and success. So all of those cool things. So I'm already in the energy. I'm like, thanks, Lynn McTaggart. I'm going to ride this wave to class. Yeah. And thank you all so much for being here. As always, we will see you next time on Energy Matters.
See you, everybody.
You've been listening to the Energy Matters podcast with Cody Edner and David Gandelman. Brought to you by intuitivevision.net and groundedmind.com. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or soundcloud.com.